simply translating it by spiritual ignores the fact that if St. Paul meant spiritual, he would have said pneumatikos, because he uses that word a lot. And that's not the word that he uses there. And others believe that the word logikos can and should be translated, like Spock would certainly say, as logical. And as Paul knew, Aristotle defined the logikos virtues as virtues of the mind, not just moral virtues. And the use of logikos to mean philosophically logical is attested to logikon. And the word deals exclusively with the realities of the mind, so logical isn't a bad translation. Where am I going with this? I'm going to do something which I would consider unforgivable. I'm going to take this concept now out of its sitz in Leben, but I'm going to put it into its liturgical context of how we heard that word this morning. Take it out of Romans 12 and how we heard that this morning, and even more than that, and to make it a broader term, and let's just take all those possible meanings and apply that to our concept and the practice of worship, communal worship, as we experience it today, each of us. And immediately comes to my mind with that thought the words of the sainted Russian bishop of the 19th century, Theophan Zatvornik, Saint Theophan the Recluse, who echoes Saint Athanasius the Great of Alexandria, who in the 4th century wrote, and here I get into my area, it's about liturgics and about worship and worship. Oh, here I have to digress again. Worship as singing. I did several funerals lately, and you're going to love this story. I have to tell the Jingle Bell story because I think it's really really appropriate here. I had a funeral, and unfortunately, it was somebody who was not terribly connected to the church, so I had to make sure, you know, that there is a cantor there to sing the responses. And so I asked Juliana if she would be the cantor for this service, and I told the family and the funeral director that I will be there, and the psalomshchitsa, the cantor will be there. And 2 days later, I got a message on the phone from the funeral director saying, you know, the family decided they don't want music at the funeral. And I'm thinking, like, huh? no one in the family is Orthodox, obviously. And so I immediately called, and I was afraid to call back the funeral director, because I was afraid what I might say. You know, if be careful, you know, to be really sarcastic, because this person's he's invincibly ignorant about that. This person had never set foot in an Orthodox church in his whole life, and so he had no idea. He's just relaying a message. And I said, well, we can't do that. And I said it in such an authoritative way, not a mean way, but an authoritative way, that he said, oh, okay, yes, Father, that's fine. And that was it. And then the next day the phone rang again, and they said, well, the family wants, they want a list of the numbers that you will be singing. And left a number for me to call the responsible family member. And so I did, and I'm playing along with this totally now. And I said, well, we're going to sing select verses responsorially to the 17th Kathisma, followed followed by, yes, the Yevlogitaria, a session on him, followed by a canon and the sixth tone, and then I give them list of hymns. I said, and selected hymns of from the 8th century, the burial verses of St. John of Damascus. And you know, by the time I got to this, she said, that's enough fun. and then she said, well, I just wanted to, this is truly true, and you know by now, it's the third time you've heard this, so I'm not making this up. She said, well, I was just afraid, like that you'd think that, like, my mother's favorite song was Jingle Bells or something like that. That's what you were going to do. And she was serious. Like, she thought that that Juliana and I would sit down and make it all up somehow and do it and, you know, put together a good show. And that's what they thought. But you know what? It didn't turn out that way, did it? It didn't turn out that way at all. I think it was very edifying for everybody. But anyhow, back to St. Athanasius in the 4th century, he says, those who sing properly psalmodize not only with their tongue, but also with their mind. And they benefit greatly not only themselves, but also those who desire to listen to them. And I hope we never lose sight of the apparently, and this is what I say this for discussion, which I hope, not always so self-evident truth that our worship always requires a state of inner attention. Always. And that's always, by the way, that's always going to be a part of our spirituality of imperfection. We're never going to, like, say, oh, I'm there, I've gotten there. We have to constantly ask, and as you know, those of you know, we make an effort, I'm sure, monastics, I look at your schedule, you do Vespers, Matins, Hours, every day. It's a constant effort of redirecting thoughts and to try and asking God to allow us to be present at least for some tiny percentage even of that. I remember one Anglican bishop of San Francisco was quoted on his deathbed. His family surrounded him before he died, and they said, well, gee, we'd like to grant you one last wish of your heart's desire. And he said, I don't think you can do that. And they said, no, let us try. And I said, you can't do that. And he said, what's the wish, last wish of your heart's desire? And he said, I would like to be able once in my life to say the Lord's Prayer through without being distracted. One time. And by the way, don't think about that. Because even if you think about that, you will be distracted during it. If you think about not being distracted, that'll do it. It's not easy. It's not easy at all. We're giving a warning, actually. In fact, I don't know, did you use the Oktoikos last Monday morning at Matins? In tone 3, there's that verse, often when I stand to sing the hymns, I'm found, it's so wonderful. See, that you all know exactly what I'm going to say. What a beautiful thing. I'm found to be committing sins. With my tongue, I'm singing praises, but with my soul, I'm considering inappropriate things. But correct both through repentance, Christ God, and save me. And that's written by monastics for monastics, people who are professional prayers and professional worshipers, who have to struggle constantly with that. And so we speak and write about reasonable worship to God as logiki latria, slovesnaya služba, worship characterized by logos. And here's the big question, I guess. Do we not sometimes pay lip service to the importance of the word and then act as if they had almost no significance at all? And one of my mentors always been is Vladika Arseny of North. How much time do I have? Because you know.
Well, I mean, in theory, about 16 minutes.
Okay, one minute.
Yeah,
okay.
Now it's
15
and
50
seconds.
Not that we
want to
be.
But who's counting?
Yeah. Okay. Now, what does that mean in theory, Mother?
Well, because in practice we're good Orthodox and we don't obey time.
Okay. We'll see where this carries us. Vladika Arseny of Novgorod. Those of you who are lovers of 20th century Russian church history probably know all about Vladika Arseny. Is that a familiar person to some of you? Probably for two reasons. Anybody know, can tell one thing that he was very famous for? Arseny of Novgorod, turn of the 20th century. No, he was one of the three candidates that was proposed as Patriarch of Moscow in 1918. I found that out later in life. I knew Arseny because he wrote the introduction to one of my favorite books, as it's called, and that's I loved that one because, you know, that was the time of the Cold War and the space race, you know, and he was author of a book which, wow, it's called Sputnik Psalomshika. I thought, wow, you know, and that's when all the Americans were calling them Sputniks. Do you remember that? And Arseny, I'm going to read a little passage from that, but Arseny was also one of the candidates for, and you know that story of Tikhon's election, you know, the three candidates, it was Tikhon Vilavin and Archbishop Antoni Krapovitsky and Arseny of Novgorod. Remember in the Moscow Daily newspaper how they described them? They and rely on you to translate that. That they said that Vladika Antoni, who was Metropolitan of Kiev, was samy uchonly, that he was the most learned, would you say, of all the bishops of the Holy Synod, and Arseny had the distinction of being samy strogi, which the most strict. And Tikhon Vilavin samy dobry, which is a hard word to translate. You know, very easy to say that it means good, but it doesn't mean just good as bad. It has the quality of
kind.
See, in my language, dobry would mean good.
That's right.
But see, yeah, that's another good example. In fact, I'm glad we mentioned. I was wondering, why am I digressing about this? This is why. For example, the word dobry, in my dialect, it only means good. But it can mean, to a great Russian, they would hear the word kind. We don't have the word, like, for example, even like хороший. That word doesn't exist. There's only the one word. So, again, that was then, and this is now. But Arseny wrote... In church, mean what you say, and say what you mean. And we'll get into that, hopefully, in the discussion of what that might mean and what it means to not do that. And in his introduction to the Sputnik, he writes, by way of conclusion, let's reflect on the responsibility we have of helping one another come to a better comprehension of our worship. The divine services are indeed tools of evangelism. They are treasure chests of great riches, but Those are chests which are often hidden and locked. If indeed we become obstacles to the faithful hearing them. We must ever grow, this is all quote by the way, we must ever grow in our understanding and real appreciation of these treasures. And this is not just a matter of studying the services or even the rubrics. We cannot help others unless we develop in ourselves the proper attitude and frame of mind. But it will ultimately be the example of our own lives that demonstrate to all that worship, latria here, is the center not only of our parish life, but of power in our own lives as well. However, all the example in the world will not suffice if unaccompanied by a catechesis that is truly profound, convincing, engaging, and clear. End quote. And the perfect way to end this part, we'll have a little discussion, hopefully, about it, is the very saint that we celebrated today, Gregory of Nyssa-Syria. If you read, most of you know his life, probably you could tell it better than I can. All the versions end with the story of his ministry in Nyssa-Syria, that when he came there were 17 believers in the city, and when he died, there were 17 pagans. I'm not going to say what I said last night. Should I?
Yeah.
No. They were the same paper. Yeah.
They weren't the same
shit. That's like really bad.
Thank you. Well, it might have been a little town, you know. No, it wasn't. It was a big town, right? No, absolutely.